We are broadcasting live from the Farmers Market at the Ohio Public Health Department on Parsons Avenue. The Farmers Market is open till 1 p.m. We'll be here for the next hour. So welcome aboard. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. According to the 2010 census, the Latino population in Ohio increased 63.4% to a total of 354,000 people. Ohio has almost 10,000 Hispanic-owned businesses that create an estimated $1.9 billion in receipts. The total annual earnings of Hispanic Ohioans amount to approximately $5.2 billion, nothing to sniff at. Columbus is now home to 3,606 Hispanics, and it's an increase in population of 158% in the last decade. So who makes up the Latino community in Central Ohio? What do they want, and how are they changing the face of our city? Later, we'll talk to two community activists. Well, we're going to talk to some community activists right now who empower Latinos. We're going to talk about Festival Latino 2011 coming up later on in the hour. Joining us now is Josue Vicente, the executive director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Welcome to the show, Josue.
Thanks, Anna. Hola. ¿Cómo están todo el mundo?
And also with us is Sandra Lopez. She's the co-founder of Latinas in Ohio. Sandra focuses on the study of Latina women in Ohio. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Hi, Anne. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. In her testimony in the Senate on the state budget last May, Lily Kavanaugh, the executive director of the Ohio Latino Affairs Commission, quoted a U.S. Census expert who said that the futures of most metropolitan areas in the country are contingent on how attractive they are to Hispanic and Asian populations. So, how is Central Ohio perceived in that light, Josue?
Well, Central Ohio has been historically one of the main occasions to attract Latinos, especially young Latinos, since 1995, when we have seen the tremendous growth of Latino in Central Ohio, here in particularly in the city of Columbus. From now on, we have a lot of professionals now, the one maybe to come and study at OSU, Ohio State University. For some reason, believe it or not, Latinos, and especially Mexican, follow up football, American football, really close. And OSU is being one of those.
I am surprised. Really.
ESPN. Uh-huh. So for that reason, they have taken the university into a whole different level than in Mexico. So students, professional people from Mexico now have the willingness to come and pursue their careers here in Ohio. So that's another way, another wave of different people that kind of coming right here in Central Ohio, whether in 1995 was the economic and some other issues that were affecting in Mexico, and obviously low educated people with very low grades were the first wave of immigrants here. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to be seeing and respecting more professional people moving into Ohio. So that's going to be giving a twist, you know, mm-hmm. From the future generations too as well.
Sandra, what do you think? I mean, in general, that's interesting, though. This is another wave of immigration now. This isn't the same old. It's different now.
And I think part of it is that the people in Columbus and Central Ohio are friendly and warm. I actually came here 15 years ago, and I would have never expected the farmer's market today. And even as I parked and walked in here, I saw Latino families. I heard people speaking in Spanish, and they just blend in with the rest of the community. So that, even if you come just to visit family, to go to school, you end up staying. I don't know.
Just like anybody does when they move somewhere or they visit somewhere that they like.
Exactly.
My guests are Josue Vicente. He is the executive director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, and also Sandra Lopez. She is the co-founder of Latinas in Ohio. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can tweet us if you want, Ann Fisher WOSU, if that is your preferred mode of communication. Sandra, you are co-founder of Latinas in Ohio. Why was Latinas in Ohio needed in the first place?
About 2.5 years ago, a group of different women, we started talking and found the need to bring group of women together to discuss the issues that they see in the community. A lot of them felt lonely or isolated, and maybe losing a little bit of the empowerment that they maybe had in their countries or before coming here. So we created this small community program called Latinas in Ohio, Facing Challenges, Taking Action. Not only to complain about what the problems are, but how can we as a group come together and find solutions.
Where does the isolation come from? Why does that occur?
We find that many times they don't realize that there are other Latinos in the community. Right now in Central Ohio, we have some areas where some neighborhoods that you could define as Latino mm-hmm. areas. But for some other people, if you live in Powell or in Delaware or Westerville, you feel isolated. Transportation is not easy. A lot of them don't drive or don't have a way to maybe get to those neighborhoods where there's more Latinos and Latino markets. And they feel lonely, or they feel like they don't belong, that they're not accepted because they don't speak the language. So obviously you tend to limit the things you would do.
Language has been a big deal. It's something easy to, no pun intended, talk about. There's bills introduced all the time in legislatures across the country, English language only bills and that kind of thing. And there are also legislation introduced requiring multilingual translations of different government documents and that sort of thing. So it kind of cuts both ways. Josue, where do you think the whole, do you still feel a lot of pressure? Where does that language issue sit right now? It angers some people and other people just think, oh, big deal.
There's still, obviously, this is going to be the entire history of the United States, I guess. You know, 100 years from now, we're going to be having new immigrants to the United States, because that's the fact, you know, when you see economies in countries, you know, they always have jobs and good economy. They're always going to be attracting people from from the country.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case happens that right now, are the Mexican community, are the Latino community. Probably 10, 20 years from now, statistics showing that India is going to be the one who's going to be exporting a lot of the labor force to United States and to some other countries, because they have the only young economy as well, the training, and a lot of people, you know. With China has some limits of having one or two kids now. China grow and is expecting for the next 10 years to stop that growing as well, you know, to have not too many people mm-hmm. to do the labor force. Or they will have, but they will become old. So in terms of manufacturing, you're not going to have those old people come into the United States and try to work on that. So for that reason, India is now taking a huge place. So we're talking about probably, you know, in the future, having the same problem with India, which I believe they take English too as well. But that's what the same thing happened with Mexicans. You know, we take English there, but it's like Mexican English. Coming to the United States, and it's totally different accent, totally different meanings, slang that we use in a regular life, basically. So it's like, you know, even though you know English or the basic composition of the language, pronunciation and communication and acculturation, that's a totally different issue, you know, that's going to be affecting America in the entire history of the country. And that's one of the historical pieces, you know, throughout the years, basically, it's a melted pot. I mean, we have, you know, the different cultures, different languages in the United States. And that's a fact that we have to embrace. We have to be thankful, you know, that we have so many cultures, so many languages spoken in the United States. And for that reason, we can increase our business global-wise. So to me, it's going to be the same thing. You know, in always you're going to have people against the language. To me, politicians who doesn't have any plan to run to benefit the people of the United States, they will choose language issues because everybody knows here or who moved into the United States, the language or English is going to be the primary language spot. But, you know, we don't complain about it. If you talk to the immigrants, if you talk to anyone who's coming to the United States, they want to learn English.
Are there enough opportunities to learn English, or could that be better? Sandra?
Speaking for women in particular, mm-hmm. most of them, if you're here and your husband works outside the home and you stay at home with the children, that makes it a little bit difficult to go out and take classes. However, I know that throughout the city and the county, there are centers that offer free classes. But to your point, Josue, it's not easy. I've been here 15 years. I've listened to heavy metal and hip-hop growing up. Mm-hmm. And still I say things and it's like, oh my God, that didn't make any sense.
Well, it's one of the most idiosyncratic languages ever.
Yeah,
right.
So it's not simple, and I feel like maybe people here were more open to listen. When I first came to Columbus, I met people who had never heard someone with an accent, and I think that has changed. People now are excited to go to the taco trucks. So you go to the taco truck and you figure it out because mm-hmm. you want the food. So it's that effort from the Latino community and also people that only speak one language just making an effort to understand.
The Latino community is very diverse in and of itself, right, Josue?
Yes.
Tell us what we know about it now.
Well, definitely, some people will say that we have 21 countries. Some people will say that we have 25 countries, because when we're talking about Latino language, obviously, you know, Latinos or Spanish is coming from Latin and Greek. So it is a composition of Romance languages. So when we're talking about Latinos, we should be counting Italians and we should be counting Spaniards. But if you go and talk to the Spaniards, they won't count themselves as Latinos. If you talk to Italians, they won't integrate themselves too into the Latino community. Even in the country, if you have people from Brazil, which they speak Portuguese, right here we count them as Latinos. But if you go and talk to them independently, they will say, no, I'm a Latino, I'm from Brazil, I speak Portuguese. So there is a huge discrepancy on, you know, who's going to be coming and embrace the term Hispanic mm-hmm. or Latino, you know?
Yeah.
And basically what we are identifying our country is binational country, you know? So I'm Mexican, Puerto Ricans, you know? We have something in common, which is the language, you know, different cultures, different beliefs. And that's what it makes rich, the Latino culture. In the Latino culture, you can have somebody who's very dark skin and somebody who's like very blonde and blue eyes. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. We don't make the distinction by color of the skin. We just, you know, you're coming from Mexico and you're Mexican. That's pretty much the battle. You come into the United States and that's when you start making those distinctions. And that's totally new for almost everybody who's coming to the United States, you know, to start... identifying the individual by color.
Mm-hmm. I think that for me, I wasn't Hispanic until I came here. Before I came here, I was Dominican.
Okay.
So I think once you come here, culture or society tends to lump everyone. But when we get together, we clearly tell someone is from Colombia or from Peru or Dominicanos like myself. I know that here in Central Ohio, we have a lot of Mexicans and people from Central America, but in the time I lived here, the Dominican population has grown incredibly.
It's the next wave, right?
Yes.
People from Caribe, yeah.
From
Caribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
My guests, Josue Vincente. Josue is the executive director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Thank you for joining us today, Josue.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And obviously, you know, before we go out, it's very important to let the Ohioans know the Ohio is the second largest economy doing business with Mexico. So right now, it's a huge programs and intensive ways of partnership with Mexico in different states, different cities, and increase the the global economy, you know, the trade.
The Columbus Dispatch reported this morning that the Department of Development is going to shut down its international offices, and all of them, apparently, and I would imagine that includes the one in Mexico City.
I don't know really exactly. Sad. Yeah, we would be sad, you know, especially when this is the second largest economy doing with business, and Mexico is buying, last thing I hear it was like 3.5 trillion on good of in services from the United States.
Corn is a big one.
Right. So obviously it will be sad to see, you know, shutting down offices, international offices. They increment the businesses here locally in the state, in the city, in the county. So, I mean, but I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows? Lots to talk about. I hope you'll join us again, Josue.
Definitely.
Josue Vincente, he's executive director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Also with me, Sandra Lopez, the co-founder of Latinas in Ohio. Coming up, Ruben Castilla Herrera. Ruben is community organizer for Ohio Action Circle. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. We're broadcasting live, by the way, at the Farmers Market at the Ohio Public Health Department on Parsons Avenue.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit wosu.org/email to sign up.
It's another nice day in Central Ohio. Mostly sunny skies right now and a high going up to about 80 today. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 57. On Friday, mostly sunny. Tomorrow's high expected to be about 84. Friday night, partly cloudy. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms, mainly in the afternoon, and a high around 80. Sunday, a chance of showers and a high near 78. Right now, we have 71 degrees in Central Ohio.
Support for Classical 101 comes from Antioch University Midwest, holding an AUM Express application session on Saturday, August 13th to apply and enroll in just one day for adult students who want to start a master's degree. Details at midwest.antioch.edu.
And as an 89.7 NPR News sustaining member, you can make an automatic donation of as low as $5 a month. Go to wosu.org/sustainer.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting live from the Farmers Market at the Columbus Public Health Department on Parsons Avenue. If you want to join us, the Farmers Market will be open until 1 o'clock. We'll be here until noon. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Right now, we're talking about issues facing the Latino community in Columbus, inspired a little bit by Festival Latino coming up this weekend. We'll be getting a preview of that from Kappa in the next segment. Right now, Sandra Lopez rejoins us. She's the co-founder of Latinos in Ohio. It's a group that focuses on empowering Latino women in Ohio. Sandra, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Joining us now, Ruben Castilla Herrera. Ruben is a community organizer currently leading an effort called the Latina Intersection Circle. Welcome to the show, or welcome back to the show, Ruben.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
If you have a question or comment, once again, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I brought up earlier in the program Lily Kavanaugh's testimony before the, I think it was a Senate Finance Committee. In any event, it was about the state budget, which has now been enacted. But her testimony revolved almost entirely around job creation efforts and including Project Open, which helps Latino entrepreneurs get a foothold. And I'm wondering, how big of an issue is this, getting people jobs? But it seems to be more about opening businesses now. It's not about just jobs, Ruben.
Well, when the population increases, as it has, as far as the Latino population in Columbus, Central Ohio, then the businesses open, and there's also a need for jobs as well. So according to the census, we've seen the Latino population almost double here. I've been here 24 years. I've lived in Ohio most of my life, and just to see that, just to see it. I mean, I see it right now in this marketplace. You see the Hispanic Latino community presence, and certainly the jobs issue is going to come up, and businesses, small businesses are opening. I believe that they're opening on a faster rate in Central Ohio than any other group in the
in the state,
in the county.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because we're growing. We're here.
Okay. And that's a very traditional immigrant population.
Exactly.
Starts their own businesses. It's an entrepreneurial group.
And there's a need for services. People tend to support businesses where they feel familiar and comfortable. So you have someone that is bilingual. So you can go to the store and they understand English and Spanish and they provide the services and goods that you need. It's supply and demand.
Simple as that.
Yes.
When I Google Latino women and issues, and I know when you Google now that everybody gets something different, but when I do it, the first thing that pops up is healthcare.
Yes.
Big issue. Tell us about that in Central Ohio and how what your challenges are and how they're addressed.
What we had found in Latinas in Ohio is that precisely one of the challenges for Latinas, not only in Central Ohio but across the state, is access to services. Many times transportation is an issue, health insurance is an issue, understanding the environment. So if you take a prescription, being able to read it and have the doctor explain it to you. But we also find that many times a lack of sensitivity on culture, on how we deal with Latinos, maybe because we are still learning as a community. So people maybe, unlike Americans, I would say, are not so prompt to go to the doctor and ask questions. They feel shy about it, especially women.
Let me just add, what's interesting is that I work a lot with the immigrant community, and that's been a lot of the growth here in this in Central Ohio, and actually Ohio in the country, is the immigrant community. And immigrants, we know this statistically, that immigrants come to the United States healthier than the average American who has full insurance benefits. And I always tell people, we're the true organic people. You know, we don't have the Whole Foods and the Trader Joe's, but we are the true organic people. So, but when we come here, you know, when I say we, I mean immigrants. When immigrants come, then their health declines very quickly, based upon the food that's available. And so when you know, food is a common thing that we all do. We all eat, right? And so I think food is a good place to start as far as the health issue. And so I see that happening here. I see that happening with organizations. There's local matters. It's working in different communities. And so the question is, once that health declines, what are the services? What are the needs? Language is a need. I heard you talking about that earlier. But I think language is not, it's become almost an excuse. Really, the language is people are learning to speak English very quickly. The children learn it. At the center where I'm at, we have a Latino immigrant camp, and I hear English spoken more by the children than Spanish. The mothers come and speak Spanish, but language is it's going to happen. It's just going to happen.
We have Amber on Facebook, and she brings up an issue that I was going to bring up. Maybe we can quibble about the lexicon. She says, when are we going to have a guest who is against illegal immigration? She says 2/3 of Latinos in Columbus are illegal, undocumented, well, however you want to put it.
Okay.
But Ruben, let's talk about, I know the National Immigrant Youth Alliance organized a national Coming Out of the Shadows week in March.
Right.
Wondered how that came off in Ohio, and I want to talk about what do we know about the demographics of the immigrant community in terms of Latino immigrants?
Well, you know, everyone's an immigrant. We all came to this country unless you're Native American. You know, that's always said, but I want to make sure that that's clear. The other thing I want to say is for me and for many people, the term illegal alien is offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say Superman is an illegal alien. And so people are not aliens or are not here illegally. That doesn't address the problem. Now, what we've been trying to do is work for immigration reform for many years, and it kind of culminated down to the DREAM Act, which you mentioned as far as the Youth Alliance. And so I think it's the wrong question. I think the challenge is people look at the problem and not the possibility. And the possibility, what's the possibility of immigrants in Columbus, Ohio? We're immigrant friendly, I believe, more than other areas, maybe even southern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the question needs to be changed. And a lot of times those questions are based upon fear, are based upon not knowing. And so part of what we do is help teach people, and you do that by being present, you do that by being yourself and giving information. But I also know that And a lot of times facts don't matter, and even though they're important, they don't matter in that sense. People will hear what they want to hear. So, I mean, we just have to get past that. I respect the question, and I hear it all the time, and I hear it spoken to me in ways that are sometimes mean. But it's the same question, and it's asked by politicians, it's asked by clergy people, it's asked by my relatives, and so we have to get past that. There's certainly possibility. We're not here illegally. The immigration has been an issue in this country and actually the world. It always is, and we're trying to work with it right now. Right now, we're focusing on the DREAM Act. And the DREAM Act, I think, is a good start to do that. It's about young people, empowering young people that are here that have possibility.
Births have surpassed immigration as the main driver of the growth in the nation's Mexican-American population. You're involved with the Human Rights Coalition Ohio Action Circle, which is working with the Central Ohio Immigrant Justice Group to develop a Know Your Rights campaign for undocumented workers and undocumented residents. Some folks don't believe, and I'm just guessing Amber might be one of them, that undocumented residents should have any rights at all.
Well, as human beings, we have rights that are given to us by different means. And so regardless of your status here, you have a right. You have a right to exist. You have a right as a human being wherever you're at. And to me, that's you can say that's faith-based. I think as a person of faith, that's a very faith-based topic. And so who are we as human beings? Let's start right there with that bigger question. Rather than the question of borders and what have you, and rather than differences. So what we're doing with the Know Your Rights is having people know what their rights are. At one time, women didn't know what their rights were. Young people, African Americans, right now another issue is the LGBT community as well. And so it's all about knowing your rights, knowing that you have a right to exist, and what does that mean in this country right now?
Sandra Lopez, what about that issue when it comes to documentation, whether children are being cared for, whether people have access to health care, and women in particular, how much does that play a role in the challenges?
Well, it is something that is very much in front of women every day, especially for those who are here and are undocumented. What we found in Latinas in Ohio is, for example, that victims of domestic violence will probably not call the police because they are afraid that then they will be deported. When they gather the courage to ask for help, even though they know that they will probably be deported, their children are U.S. citizens, they will get to stay, then that in itself is a barrier, and it's an issue that happens in our communities that we just can't deny it. But for a lot of these women, having the right to know that they should call the police, that there are things that they can do.
But is it a right? I mean,
absolutely.
What I'm saying, getting at, is they do run a risk, though. There's a heightened sense of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, it's something different now, but they are looking and are more actively pursuing undocumented workers and residents.
Well, you know,
I guess it's not a question about is it a right, but is the fear unfounded, I guess is the question.
Well, you know, it's how do you deal with fear? It's that same issue of fear. And really, it's part of what we're doing, because I kind of want to shift this, because really what we're trying to do is help empower people. Empower women, empower immigrants, empower Latinos, empower just people in general. And how do you do that? You do that by letting them know what their rights are and being with them and making resources available to the extent that you can. And it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process for any group. And so it's the empowerment process to do that, to know what your rights are, to exercise those rights, especially when you are potentially a victim of a crime. And you become vulnerable in that sense as a woman, as a person that may be here undocumented, what have you. So, but I would, if I could, to kind of shift to what we're doing as far as the intersection, because the intersection is interesting in that we're not we're not a community in a vacuum. We're part of a larger community that we're seeing here today. Mm-hmm. And so what does that mean? What are the possibilities there? How do we intersect and move as a community in the bigger picture? How do you empower people politically, economically? You talked about that earlier. And socially. And so how do you get people to vote? You know, most of the Latinos that are here are eligible to vote and maybe do not vote. And so how do you get people engaged civically? And that's kind of the process, and know the issues. I mean, there's lots of issues right now that are happening in your state. There's a repeal on 5. There's lots of issues. Sodexo issue here in the Columbus schools. There's lots of issues that people need to know about. And so part of what we're doing is saying, yes, this is who we are. Yes, this is immigrants. Yes, these are our needs. You need to know your rights. But you're part of a larger community as well. I'm working on the west side. It's really interesting to see that actually happening in our center.
In the hilltop,
to see that actually happen where you have the white community that's there, the African-American, and now the Hispanic community, one space that are sharing space and doing things. And at first, it's almost like a little lab. At first, it was very guarded. People were guarded by the groups. But now, because of the relationship building, people are comfortable and start to talk and mix, and that intersection is happening. That's what needs to be happening in Columbus. Now, if you were to ask me when I came here 24 years ago, if I would be here speaking about this, I would say, no, not necessarily me, maybe, but certainly someone would be, because that's the growth that's happened across the country. And I want to make one other thing clear, and I may have inferred wrong, but most of the growth in the United States of Latinos are citizens, are citizens.
Right, births.
People need to know that. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Births that are here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a few more minutes left with Sandra Lopez of Latinas in Ohio and also Ruben Castilla Herrera. Ruben is community organizer for Ohio Action Circle. And Brandy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys? Hello, Sandra. Hola, Ruben. How are you guys?
Hey, hola, Brandy.
I'm calling on behalf of the League of United Latin American Citizens. We are one of the oldest civil rights organizations in the United States, founded in 1929, and we are wanting to let the Latino Hispanic community know that we are back in a way where we are improving outreach, where we're making sure that intersection there of the citizens that are representing and those that are new Americans coming to learn more about Columbus are fully aware of the services that we have available. One of our biggest missions is all for one and one for all. And what we want to make sure that we share is that we will also be at the Latino Festival alongside the Ohio Commission on Latino Affairs, as well as the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And that our main goal is to just advance the economic condition, the educational attainment, the political influence, housing, health, all of that for Hispanic populations. We work right alongside Ruben and Sandra, and I'm excited to see this movement. And thank you for putting together this show.
Thank you, Brandy.
If I could, when people come together, they do a couple of things. One, they eat. And the other is they organize. And so there's sometimes it's just organizing to know what to do for the evening, but we organize, and all groups do that. And so we're lucky that we have groups like LULAC and the commission, that's a state commission, other groups that have organized, the Hispanic Coalition, Centro Esperanza, Lesbian, like the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. There's many here that have organized and are doing great things.
Before we go, you know, speaking of politics, I guess more than 6.6 million Latinos voted in last year's election, a record for a midterm. That's according to an analysis by the Pew Hispanic Center, and it was fueled by that rapid population growth we talked about. Also, we're a larger share of the electorate in 2010 than in any previous midterm election, representing 6.9% of all voters. That was up from 5.8%, a whole percentage point from 2006. That's a lot of people. Do you have any concerns? Is there a voice in the redistricting process now that's underway after the census?
There Ruben? Are, and, you know, speaking of LULAC, we just called, there is a person that is working on that from the state LULAC organization, And that's, you know, the interesting thing when for redistricting with us is our communities, we're just now figuring out where we're at here in Central Ohio, say, the west side, east side, north side. So what does that mean as far as the process of redistricting? It's a big issue that we're not having that conversation yet, and we need to do that collectively in a better way. And so that's part of the process, I think, that's happening as far as involvement politically and civic engagement. But that's a very good point. And the other is as far as election, I know that nationally we made a big difference in many races. And so we're seeing both parties, in a sense, try to, some would say pander, but some would also say try to, honestly looking at our issue. Immigration is our number one issue. And the Pew Research Center has determined that immigration. So the question is now, what does that mean?
The Pew Hispanic Center?
Absolutely. And so it is the biggest collective of all Latinos. We're not just Mexican. We're also Puerto Rican and Colombian, Central South American. And so it's the number one issue that we're concerned with. And within that, it's the DREAM Act. You know, I want to...
Empowering the youth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, who's against empowering youth, really?
Well, we have to bring this conversation to a close. Ruben, I hope you'll join us again, though. Ruben Castilla Herrera, he is with the Ohio Action Circle, an advocacy group for the Latino community in Columbus. And also with us is Sandra Lopez. She's co-founder of Latinas in Ohio, Facing Challenges, Taking Action. Sandra, thanks for joining us today.
Muchas gracias.
Coming up, we're going to get a preview of the 16th or 7th, it's the 16th annual Festival Latino coming up this weekend. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
World War I was so bloody, 21,000 British soldiers were killed or fatally wounded in just one day. On the next Fresh Air, Adam Hochschild, author of To End All Wars, talks about the war and the people who opposed it, including men who refused the draft and soldiers who refused to fight, risking prison or execution. Join us.
Fresh Air comes your way in about 15 minutes here on 89.7 NPR News. Here's another program you might be interested in, this one airing tomorrow night at 8 on our sister station, WOSU TV 34. It's superstar Andrea Bocelli returning to his native Italy. A show was filmed near the town of Volterra in Tuscany. Bocelli is joined by special guests, including Kenny G, David Foster, Lang Lang, and Sarah Brightman for an evening of romantic favorites. That's great performances. Andrea Bocelli live in Tuscany tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on WOSU TV 34. In the weather forecast for Columbus, very nice. 71 degrees our temperature right now. It'll get up to about 80 today, down to 57 tonight under clear skies. And then on Friday, mostly sunny. Tomorrow's high near 84 degrees. By Friday night, clouds start to move in. Saturday, we could have showers and thunderstorms, mainly in the afternoon, and a high about 80 degrees. Sunday, a chance of showers. By Monday, partly sunny and a high near 80 degrees. And once again, our current temperature is 71 degrees.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are right now at the Columbus Public Health Department on Parsons Avenue at their Farmers Market. It's a glorious day out here. The place is packed, but I'm sure there's still plenty of food. If you want to drop by, it's open till 1 p.m. We'll be here for a few more minutes. We're switching gears a little bit right now. We've been talking about issues facing the local Latino community. Now we're going to swing to a different beat and hear about the rich tastes and traditions of Latin America coming to Columbus this Saturday and Sunday. Joining us now, Rolanda Copley from the Kappa Columbus to talk about the 16th Annual Festival Latino, presented by Kappa on August 13th and 14th at Genoa Park in downtown Columbus. Welcome to the show, Rolanda.
Hi, thank you.
And also with us, Enrique Infante. He's a musician and songwriter. He lives in Columbus, born in Peru. Welcome to the show, Enrique.
Thank you very much.
You're performing at the festival this weekend.
That's right.
Tell us
Saturday.
What you do.
Well, I've been doing music for so long, and it's a nice opportunity always to play at the Festival Latino. I wasn't there last year, but I was helping with the children's area. And this year, they're coming back, so I'm going to be on the main stage on Saturday at 4:15.
It's your band, Deja Vu. It's a Latin fusion band. It'll be performing at 4:15 at Festival Latino.
Yes, that's correct.
It will hold an interactive hour for children that focuses on Latin American culture, including a drum circle. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's very interesting. I work in the library. So the
Columbus Metropolitan?
I work actually at the Westland Library. Okay. And I just been promoted last March, and I've been working with children there. And so I do Spanish, bilingual story times once a month during the fall time. And I just did another program also in the summertime for the summer reading club. So I'm exposed to children all the time, and somehow the music and the arts are very involved with that, because culture is education. And so I'm going to do that. It's 1 hour on the Festival Latino in the children's area, and I decided to put together also like a drumming circle kind of thing. So I'm going to read probably about a book and maybe sing one or two very well-known Latin American tunes for children. And then we're going to break it down with a drumming circle. So everybody is more than welcome to come, bring their own tambores or cajon or whatever, and you just play with us.
That's Saturday from 2 to 3 and also Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m.
Yes.
At the Festival Latino. Rolanda.
Yes.
What else is going on?
You name it, it's happening at Festival Latino. We have music all day long from noon until close. We're there from 11 to 8 both days this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. We have a stage on the river, and we're going to have music going all day long, Ohio-based Latin-type bands, and then we've got some international headliners that are coming in. We have 24 Horas on Saturday night at 6, and they are a very, very young trio, and they do bachata. And then 6 o'clock on Sunday, our Sunday headliner is Tito Rojas, which is huge, Grammy nominations for him, and he'll be backed by the Sammy De Leon Orchestra out of Cleveland, and they're completely excited to be playing with him. So,
is a Festival Latino, is it a big festival compared to others? How does it rank up there now after 16 years? And how do you even, I mean, look at it that way?
Well, I mean, Kappa came, this is our third time presenting it for Kappa. It started as a city event, and this is the third time that Kappa has presented it. And from last year to this year, it grew about 15,000 people in attendance. So
it grew by 15,000?
By 15. So we're, you know, we're completely excited about that. People come and have the best time. There's an area they can dance at where the bands play. We also have a dance plaza where there's dance demonstrations and sometimes dance instruction. So if you want to learn salsa, you know, if you want to just, and the costumes are amazing with all of the flowers and the bright colors and the huge skirts on the girls. It's just amazing to watch. So we try to push it being a family festival because we close at 8, so it's there all day. We close at 8, and we have a lot of children's activities. We're going to have Lucille from the Clippers come out, the mascot, and then the Crew Cats coming the next day to kind of hang out with the kids. The crew's also doing a soccer clinic for the kids that day, so then teach them a little tips from the crew soccer players, and they always love that, sign autographs and things like that. And we also have something we started last year, was an artist area where Latino artists can display what they do.
Graphic art, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This year we have a lot of painters and one photographer, so they can kind of make up their own booth and put out their wares, and they can sell or they can just, you know, display. And just kind of get people aware of that they're here and they have this amazing ability.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest, Enrique Infante, he's a musician, songwriter who lives in Columbus, also a librarian. And Rolanda Copley from the Kappa Columbus. They manage the Festival Latino. It wasn't always the case, though, right, Rolanda?
Correct. This is our third year presenting.
Now, why the changeover? What happened and how's it gone?
It started out as a city event, started out very small, and it just kind of increased over time. About 3 years ago, the city came to us, and they had some very hard decisions to make with the budget, and they said, this is just going to go away because we have some, you know, budget cuts we need to make. Can you take this on? And luckily, we were at a point within the company that we were able to take it on, so we kind of reformatted it a little bit and moved it to Saturday and Sunday and cut it off a little bit earlier.
So it used to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It used to be Friday, Saturday at least, and then maybe half a day on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we kind of moved it to the weekend. We made more family-friendly hours and really tried to put more with artists like Enrique in the children's area, try to beef it up as far as things for kids to do. Coastline's going to be there because we are in their backyard.
Genoa Park.
Yes. And they have some kiosks, some science activity kiosks out, and they're also going to do their liquid oxygen show live this year, and that's new. This
don't forget the food.
Oh,
I was going to bring up the food, Enrique. You don't know me very well, but I was bringing up the food, definitely. There's a ton of vendors.
There is a ton of vendors. This year they are, one whole side of the fairway this year is all food. All completely vendors from one end to the other. There's food from, and there's all kinds of fair. I mean, there's Nicaraguan, there's Peruvian, mm-hmm. there's Caribbean, there's Mexican. Yeah, I mean.
Venezuelan, did she say? Yeah. Yeah.
So there's an amazing amount of food that's going to be there this year. And a little bit
it's getting better every year. More tents and everything. More yeah. restaurants are being opened here.
Right. Well, 20 years ago when I moved to Columbus, 21 or 22 years ago it was, I think there was one or two Mexican restaurants in, mm-hmm. in the Columbus. And we came from Toledo, the area, that's where I moved from. And there were a ton of restaurants mm-hmm. there. And now, I'm sure they give them a run for their money in Columbus.
Well, people like it. You know, they want to keep opening where people go. You know?
Right. Keep eating.
That's right.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, we're talking about Festival Latino, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't wait too long. We're only on the air for about another 8 minutes, but I'd love to hear your calls and get your calls. Enrique Infante, you're going to also hold a Taekwondo exhibition.
Yeah, that's something that...
is that different?
I've been doing for a while.
Is that Latino?
No, of course it's not, but I had the opportunity. Yeah. I just opened my own school. I'm working with the Centro Esperanza Latino, the Latino Center of Hope in Hilltop area. So we are working together, and I just opened my own Taekwondo school there. So it's called Infante Taekwondo School, and it's to give opportunity to the parents that doesn't speak English to pretty much communicate and help them, you know, with the kids to practice in a sport. And it's mm-hmm. happened, you know, I've been doing this for so long, and I say, you know, I'm going to teach again, and let's do it in for the Latino community. And I have 7 students so far, and I think it's going to increase after the exhibition we're doing on Saturday there.
So it's when we hear about things like Taekwondo exhibitions, Festival Latino isn't just about Latino culture, it's for Latinos.
It's both. Does that make we kind of look at it as a celebration of that Latin culture. So obviously, you know, Latinos love to come and celebrate and dance and sing and have a great time. And we also, and it's for everybody, you know, to come out and experience a culture that is here, but they may not know a lot about.
You said it increased by about 15,000 visitors. So how many are we talking about total?
Last year was 35,000 over the 2-day spread.
And how do you manage that large of a group? Oh, it's just over on the one side of the river right in front of Cosi, right?
Right, right. We try to just kind of space people out to where there's easy access to the food. And the stage area is down on the river, so it's a little bit separate. So if you're down there to listen to a concert, that area is all for the dancing and people who just want to sit there and listen to the music. So we try to space things out and kind of equal it on either side of the stage. So there's plenty to do on
it's a very nice area.
It's very balanced.
Is the Cosi parking open, or is it Vets Memorial, all of it?
Both, yeah. And there's a little bit of street parking, but Cosi parking lot, Vets parking lot, it's all open for the festival.
We have all these stairs to sit on, and just right in front of the stage, too.
Yeah.
It's a great stage.
Yes.
Enrique,
the river behind and all that.
How long have you lived here?
About 13 years.
So you've been going to festival? What?
I played there before too in 2004, I think, when I first found my band. 2004 until 2007, probably.
Did you go when you weren't performing?
I went there when a few international artists were here. Yeah, I think the first time I went there was probably 2001 or 2000.
How's it changed?
Well, it was bigger. It had like about 5 different stages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very, very crowded.
Uh-huh. So it was bigger.
When the city was doing it, it was a different location. And
Music in the Air, I think it was.
And that's a City Park and Recs department. And, I think at one point it was larger. And we're just at the point we're rebuilding it, and it's just...
I heard that there was like about 300,000 people at one point.
Yeah.
1 year. Yeah. Well...
So it's changed.
We're getting there.
Yeah. What kind of plans?
It's still here. That's the important thing. It's still here. It still exists.
That's so important, yes.
Rolanda, what kind of plans does Kappa have for it? How has it been as an investment of time for Kappa?
we love doing it. We love bringing that element, you know, to Columbus, because obviously there's a lot of cultural festivals here, the Greek festival, the Asian festival, right, that kind of thing. And this is just one component that we like to contribute, and we think it's important to keep it going. So we're still building it. You know, every year we just try a few new things and see what works and what doesn't, what can improve, what we like, you know, that kind of thing. It's just a process of rebuilding it. And, you know, obviously we'd love to get it back up to that status of being, you know, 300,000
yeah,
people.
Yeah, and what Kappa is doing this year and hire all these musicians from different styles of Latino music is just great, because we're having a little bit of Mexican, bachata from Dominican Republic, we have salsa from Puerto Rico, and some other fusion bands like mine, and different mixes, you know.
Right, that's, and that's the great thing about the Latin culture. It's just that there are so many components. There are, you know, and that's something people can learn by coming to the festival. There's not just Mexican. There's Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. There's Peruvian. There's Colombian. There's so many different mixes and so many different sounds. It's just really a treat for the eyes, the ears, the taste buds, everything when you come down, because there's just so many different flavors inside one culture, which is very fun.
And it attracts people from how wide of an area do you think right now?
Well, I mean, these are statewide bands. So there's some Toledo bands, there's some Toledo dance companies, Dayton, Cleveland.
Every year I see always people come from different places, different cities. Cincinnati, Cleveland, Toledo, Lorraine.
I would say at least within the state, if not maybe a little broader, but... because we pull in bands from those areas as well.
Tell us, is there a website people can go to learn more about Festival Latino?
FestivalLatino.net.
Okay, FestivalLatino.net. We'll post that at our website at wsu.org/allsides. We were talking about Festival Latino. It's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at Genoa Park. It's right by Cosi. If you want to visit...
And most importantly, admission is free.
Oh, yeah. Gratis.
It's all free. Okay. So please come down, and there's plenty to do and plenty to taste and plenty to hear.
Bring the kids. Bring your appetite. Bring your ears.
Exactly. Yep. And expect to have fun.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Rolanda Copley.
Sure, absolutely.
Appreciate that from
us.
Kappa. And Jersey Boys are coming up. Jersey, how many Boys? Days? Is it 4 days or five
it
days
is,
or some six?
It's next Wednesday, or the previews start next Wednesday. So, yeah.
I've been watching the top of the dispatch. And also, Enrique Infante, musician, songwriter, lives in Columbus, born in Peru. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Muchas gracias a ti. Thank you.
Enrique will be performing with his band Deja Vu. It's a Latin fusion band. Saturday at 4:15, he'll have an interactive hour for children on storytelling and a drum circle. That's on Saturday twice from 2 to 3, and also from 4 to 5 p.m.
On Sunday.
I'm sorry. Sunday at 4 to 5 p.m. and Saturday 2 to 3 p.m. He'll also have a taekwondo exhibition on Saturday from 11:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. if you're interested in that. We are been broadcasting live from the Columbus Public Health Department on Parsons Avenue at their beautiful farmers market. It's been a complete delight. There is some fruit piling up on the table now, even as I speak. So we appreciate that.
Jummy.
Yeah. We really appreciate the food. I want to thank the staff this week. It's been a tough week, and you guys have done a great job for All Sides. Great. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thank you, Alan. The All Sides staff includes producer Linda Taylor, associate producer Amy Jurevich, student radio intern, WSU radio intern Leticia Wiggins. She's been doing a yeoman's job this week. Radio operations director Kevin Patrol is right behind me. Thank you, Kevin, for all your help. And senior broadcast technician Eric French. He's here too. So there he is. He's looking at me. He's telling me I got to wrap it up. So thanks again for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Oh.
Support for 89.7 comes from Edible Columbus, a magazine devoted to culinary traditions, seasonal cooking, and the local food movement in our community. More information on the summer edition can be found at ediblecolumbus.com.